Hey, wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 321 of the podcast with my wonderful guest, Jenny Tolman. What a treat. What a treat. Nope. Just continuously inventing songs that aren't songs and that are not good. I hope you enjoy this from a very talented singer-songwriter who is very good. If you would, I very much invite you to stick around after the credits, and we will be playing the entirety of Jenny's song, My Welcome Mat, which you will, in very short order here during the episode, was a song that Jeff Bridges ended up covering because he was such a huge fan of it, which I think is kind of amazing. So please enjoy the episode. I want to also welcome you to share and continue to like and help push out the word about Fortune Rookie, because it has officially been announced that it's a contender for an Emmy. Yay! So if you can give us some support on that front, it will be great, because it would be terrific to have that recognition. All right, guys, have a great time listening to the episode. Have a wonderful week in life. I said that like I wasn't going to talk to you again next week. I assure you I will. Let's do it. And sing. Just kidding. That's it. It's just a high pressure situation where I command. I just send you commands.
Perfect.
And then you have to respond very quickly to all of them. Actually, I say that, but the MASH game is a little bit like that. The hard thing about that, just to give you a taste of the future, is that I put you on the spot to name like favorite things, which I don't like being asked. I'm always like, I can't think of anything right now.
I know. So people always ask you what your favorite song is, and it's like, it's my favorite child.
I know, exactly. What are you gonna, especially if something like that, where it's, they're asking you about something that clearly is wildly important to mm-hmm. you, because it has to do with what you're doing and what your passion is, and then it's like, pick one.
Yep, good luck.
Yeah. That's tough. And then the influences question, I'm sure, is like,
all the time.
You just have to be ready with your kind of go-to answers.
All the time.
Yeah. What if you just completely threw someone off and said something like no one was expecting? Like, all of a sudden you just start answering things.
Sometimes it's fun. So you better watch it.
Okay. All right. Note to self, be ready for anything with this influences question. Now, you are in LA as part of an overall tour. Or are you here just to kind of do some stuff specific to California and then head back to Nashville?
What prompted this trip? Actually, I've never been to LA.
Welcome.
This is my first time. My mom's from the Bay Area, so I've been to the Bay Area, but never to LA.
Okay.
But I wrote a song with Dave Brainerd, my producer, and John Goodwin, who's another amazing songwriter. And John actually grew up with Jeff Bridges. And so they were childhood friends, and they're still best friends to this day. And the song that I put out, it was my last single, called My Welcome Mat. And John played it for Jeff, and Jeff fell in love with it. And he's actually playing it at Lebowski Fest.
I heard that.
Tonight.
That is so awesome. And that's tonight.
Yeah.
Are you going to be there? And where's
I
the
am.
Way?
It's at Lebowski Fest. The Wiltern.
That's a great venue, too. What a beautiful exterior. Have you seen the...
I haven't seen it yet.
It's beautiful. It's this sort of Art Deco patinaed, kind of green tinted, beautiful iron kind of you'll see when you see it. It's like one of those facades where you're like, oh wow, this is special.
That's awesome.
Clearly it has great stories connected to it and all that kind of good stuff.
Was that something that
because obviously when you tell an anecdote like that, the first impulse is to be like, oh my gosh, Jeff Bridges, that's amazing,
right?
Like, is that something that happened in an organic enough way, in a way that you had you had the awareness that you had this connection with him, the 6 degrees of separation or less in this case. Mm-hmm. And so when it finally became real and happened, maybe it sounds like it was kind of quick, but, or was it just out of the blue? Like, oh my God, what? Oh, wow.
It was actually pretty out of the blue.
Yeah.
I mean, we've known that John is friends with Jeff for a while, but I've never met him, but we've always heard John talk about him. And it was just super random. One day, John calls us up and said, hey, I played the song for Jeff, and man, he loved it. Like, he wants his band to learn it already, so they're gonna learn it, and he's gonna play it. And we're like, oh, okay, cool. I don't know what that means. And then, like, about a week later, he calls us again. guys, I just got off of FaceTime with Jeff and he was playing my welcome mat for me and he says he's going to open Lebowski Fest with it.
That is and so awesome.
Dave and I looked at each other. We're like, what do we do with this information?
Yeah.
Like I'm just some girl from Tennessee that has no idea anything about Hollywood.
Right.
But I do know that Jeff Bridges is a ginormous actor.
He's a ginormous actor. He's crazy talented.
He's going to be singing my song. I feel like we need to take advantage of that and at least go get an iPhone video.
Yes, my God. Yes, that's fantastic.
So here I am.
Oh, my gosh. I love everything about this. And also what I think is so amazing, and I'm sure there are a million versions or examples of stuff like this in different realms, but to be someone who's your age and to have created this piece of art that someone who's been around and kind of heard a lot, and he's been a musician for years and years and years and years, yeah, and years, and you know, he has all kinds of access that to just life, mm-hmm, that many of us don't necessarily have, that something would hit him that hard.
It's pretty surreal.
I mean, that says, yeah, a lot.
Well, thank you. But yeah. I mean, my co-writers are amazing writers as well. So I can't take all the credit. But yeah, it's a pretty crazy feeling to know that you've created something that is touching other people. And just in general, too, anytime you make a piece of music that moves people in any type of way. But yeah, especially a name like Jeff Bridges is,
yeah,
a pretty outrageous thought to conceive in your mind.
Really, really good start. And so how long have you been writing music or playing or singing? Was that something you grew up doing?
Yeah, so I was born and raised in Nashville. And
that helps.
Still live there, yeah.
In terms of like, oh, this is can be real.
Exactly.
This can be a career and all,
yeah,
that.
Yeah, my dad actually was a singer back in the day, and he actually lived in LA for a few years. But he was put together into a group called the Indian River Boys by Burt Reynolds.
Amazing.
Believe it or not. And because they all worked at the Burt Reynolds Dinner Theater in Jupiter, Florida. And him and Dom DeLuise put these
Amazing.
Four guys together and said, you need to stick together and you need to sing country music. And my dad's from Boston. And so my dad's like, okay, cool.
Wow.
And so they moved out to LA for what was supposed to be just a month or so, and it ended up being 3.5 years. And then they ended up moving to Nashville, and that's how I was born in Nashville. But so he sang on Garth Brooks's No Fences record and did a lot of really cool stuff in Nashville and ended up switching to the business side. But I grew up around a bunch of amazing songwriters and musicians every day and walking up the bonus room stairs to a platinum record from Garth Brooks. And all these things were normal to me. And
Absolutely.
So I didn't know any other life. And so music was very much the foundation of my childhood. And I started playing piano by ear when I was 3, and I've always sang. And my first solo was Chicken Little when I was
Wonderful.
In kindergarten. I was Chicken Little, and this girl, she was so mean. She tried to tell me, she was like, you know, Chicken Little's a boy. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I got the solo.
Yeah.
But so I've always just sang and done music. And
I got to tell you, by the way, I did not know Chicken Little was a musical. Like I don't know it as a thing.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a kid's play involving music.
The sky is falling down, 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 and we must tell the king.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
There we go. That was it.
And that girl
brought me
so
to the
envious.
Big times.
She was trying so hard to
yep.
make you feel shame about your wonderful solo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I rocked it. I rocked that Chicken
How
Little.
How long is that of a performance? Or is it just like a song? Like
I'm pretty sure it was just like that
it's
was
like a 2-hour play.
No, I'm pretty sure it was maybe like a 15-minute okay. like skit
Got
in
it.
Kindergarten.
Got it.
And I went to Catholic school growing up, and so we performed it on the oh my gosh, I'm such a bad Catholic. I forgot what it's called, but on the yeah. steps leading up to the altar.
Yeah, I don't know.
We
either,
performed it on the steps to the altar.
Wonderful.
Chicken Little.
Wonderful.
And so yeah, anyways, I've always been musical, and I actually started writing stories in middle school, elementary school, and I thought maybe I would be a children's author, do something like that, just because I loved creating all these characters and making all these crazy stories come to life. And I would read them to my class. I was really lucky to have teachers that were super encouraging and inspiring and would want me to read what I was writing. And so when I turned 16, it kind of all came together because it was when Taylor Swift had really blown up. And I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Okay. I just got a guitar for my birthday. I can play the piano. Together. I can sing and I write stories.
Yeah.
And it was like this light bulb moment that I was like, duh.
Right.
You're a country artist. I've always loved country music. I grew up in Nashville and I remember telling my mom when I was a little girl riding back from dance class that it was Brad Paisley's song, We Danced. And I remember sitting back there and I was like, Mom, I love country music because it tells stories.
Yeah. And that was like this huge
light bulb. And ever since then, it's all that I've ever wanted to do and I'm ever going to do.
But listen, you could still end up doing kids' stories.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I could do a lot more, but definitely the country music is where it's at for me.
Yeah. What were the stories that you were writing like when you first started writing as a kid? What kind of tales were you interested in telling?
I've always been interested in this crazy characters, but especially like Southern farmer redneck characters.
And so, from early on, yes, I love it.
Always. And so there was this one particular series of stories that I wrote that, oh my gosh, I think their names.
Oh, there's a series like with like recurring characters.
Betty Jean and Lindy Lou. And they all like rode down on their tractors down the street was their transportation.
Yeah. Keeping it real. Mm-hmm. Keeping it real. Keeping it hope style.
This is what I live in Tennessee. Uh-huh. You know, what do you expect?
Yeah. I guess that's the question is what, obviously being in Nashville is a very specific and special place, which by the way, I've never been to. And I'm going in June.
You are.
Yeah. I'm doing this thing called
Pod X. We have to hang out.
I would love to.
Yeah, come over to my studio.
You can tell me. Yeah. And you can tell me what to do and stuff.
You're going to love it.
I'm so excited. I've wanted to go for such a long time. And as with many things in my life, sometimes it takes someone being like, here's a work thing.
Yes.
You will come to the city. And you're like, okay, good. Someone's making sure.
No, I've never met anybody that doesn't love it.
Yeah, same.
Which is kind of a problem because there's so many people moving there.
Yeah.
It's gotten really crazy.
That's true. That's mm-hmm. true. There is a sort of...
Well, so I mean, just don't move there. And then we'll be friends.
I promise I will be a visitor only. I will not enlarge it too much more than it already is. Do you feel like it's changed because so many people are moving, or does it just seem like it's expanding outward?
You know, it's starting to change a little bit. It's definitely different overall from when I was growing up. I mean, the skyline is almost unrecognizable. Wow. But especially over the past probably like 5 years, there's cranes. I think we're the number one city with the most cranes per square foot.
Oh, wow.
In your city or something crazy
that
like
says
that.
A lot.
But it's definitely changed a little bit because it's such a small town. Everybody calls it a small town and a city feeling because everybody usually does know each other in the music industry in Nashville. And so that part has still stayed the same for the most part, which I like. I love that small town village vibe where everybody knows each other and your friends. But definitely there's a lot of people from LA and New York starting to move out there and starting to get into country as well. And so there's definitely a change in the format of the genre, and which isn't necessarily a bad thing because it's expanding all the edges a bunch. But I'm definitely more of a traditional country lover. And so I stick to more of the organic Nashville songwriting roots, but I have a lot of friends too that are from LA and New York that are amazing track makers and all that stuff.
How is it if you don't mind indulging me, because I'm not a big country music listener other than the sort of more conventional, mm-hmm. like I'll definitely, you know, rock some Patsy Cline or some Merle uh-huh. Haggard or like, you know, even
those
some
the,
like when you get into
stuff.
Some sort of folky crossovers like your John Gorkas and your people that of course I'm blanking on now, like you will when we play our MASH game. I definitely don't know the ways in which it is contemporizing itself, like the ways in which
it's
like
super contemporary right now. I mean, I think it's like the number one growing genre in pop culture. with like Luke Bryan. I'm sure you're aware of Luke Bryan.
Yeah, I'm aware of, but it's just not something. Yeah, it's just not stuff I. Yeah. The thing about life now is that like you can either have all the access to all the stuff all the time, mm-hmm. or you can like just go down your own rabbit holes and like be very niche.
That's true.
And it depends on what you choose, you know.
Kind of about that thought that back in the day, that when there were only a certain amount of outlets and a certain amount of ways to get information, it seemed like there were so many bigger like stars. You know what I mean? That had this absolutely. Mystique about them. And now we have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and so many different outlets that you can reach these people at and see what they're doing all the time. And so it seems like the star-ness of, of famous people, quote unquote, has not been reduced, but it's less shiny than when it was so inaccessible.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of what, this is a very dark thing to say because we're not going to go down this road, but it's, that's what the, one of the things that I think has come out of the conversation about the Michael Jackson documentary that was released recently is this whole idea of like, there was nothing, I mean, there just isn't anyone who has the kind of fame and worship worldwide that, that Michael Jackson does. Like everyone can kind of come up with like, well, maybe, but they don't have a go-to. They're like, well, maybe Beyonce, but it's not quite this, you know?
Right.
So that, and that was still an era of, you know, no internet, like record labels.
There was this mystique.
That's how it's happening. Yeah. And
yeah,
there
my
is,
dad
it's
always tells
away.
Me since he was friends with Burt Reynolds, he's like, Burt was one of the last superstars that there actually was that had this mystique about him, that he would put on his sunglasses in the corner of the restaurant and sit with his face to the wall.
Right. And how did that also, I imagine that would reduce, or maybe it doesn't because every situation is different. Every famous person is different. But for someone like your dad to have had those kinds of encounters and to be able to relate to you that, you know, people are people and that there's, you know, that the whole fame thing is a little odd and sort of not real, but also real.
A weird mind trip that you go on, because even in country music right now, you've got your stars, but, yeah, it's definitely an awareness level that I was lucky to have grown up around, to be like, okay, this is a thing and they're normal people. They get mad, they get upset, they get happy and they get excited and they laugh and they have all the same emotions as us.
Yeah.
They just have a lot more attention on them at certain points of the day.
Which can be good and really hard,
right?
You know, at times.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, I love hearing that the industry in Asheville has a friendliness to it, and that it does, because you and I were speaking a little bit before we started recording that also those kinds of environments can breed, you know, a competition and a competitive feeling that when you really strip it down person to person, it's like, why are we doing this? Like, why do we have,
absolutely,
you know, and I get it. Of course, like it's hard if, you know, there's only so many jobs and you feel like people are getting them, or, you know, somebody's getting a record deal and you haven't gotten it yet, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
What do you think, number one, have you seen that started to happen at all in Nashville because of this kind of influx of people who are coming in from maybe a different headspace than what you experienced growing up in like the core of Nashville?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a little bit of a shift happening to where there are more cliques, if you want to call them, but not, it's, I mean, and I don't say that in a negative connotation. It's just an observation, because there used to be one specific restaurant that everybody would hang out at, that all the writers would go to at the end of the day, or all the label executives, and you knew everybody there, and it was all kind of the same crowd. But now there's definitely an expansion in Nashville, where there's like the East Nashville crowd, or there's the straight up Music Row crowd, or there's this Berry Hill area that is kind of like the new Music Row. And so there's lots of different areas now that there's not one specific giant group, but they all still interact with each other all the time and every day. And so it is still kind of a huge family, but there's just more cousins, right. I guess we'll call it. We'll call them cousins.
I can appreciate that. I can
extended
that.
Family.
Yeah. Let me ask this question again. This is just going to prove how like completely disconnected from this entire world I am. But how, where does something like bluegrass come into play? You know, in terms of like I've my friend Sarah Watkins is a, mm-hmm. is a wonderful yeah. bluegrass artist.
Oh, I love bluegrass music.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering where that sort of fits in, because it's obviously a very very old form of music,
right.
as well, and kind of has, you know, some shared roots with mm-hmm. with contemporary country music. But is there a lot of big bluegrass scene as well?
There's definitely a bluegrass scene in Nashville, but it's not as big as just the straight up country scene. There's an amazing place that you should go to called the Station Inn in Nashville that is a big bluegrass hub, and I have a lot of friends that are just amazing. I mean, some of the best musicians in the whole entire world are bluegrass players.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a different world a little bit than the country music world,
yeah.
for sure.
Yeah. And so for you, did you go to Catholic school through high school, or was that just when you were a Chicken Little?
So I went to Catholic school.
As we call it, the Chicken Little
yes,
era.
Chicken Little uh-huh. era. I was there pre-K through sixth grade. And then in seventh grade, I decided that I wanted to switch to public school. Kind of just because I had been going to school with the same 30 or 40 people for, what is that, like 10 years?
Yeah.
And I remember looking, this is a really weird thought to have when you're in sixth grade, but whatever. I'm sure that we've all had it. I remember looking around at the boys and I was like, and that's it at the time. I'm like, this is all that I have to choose from. Like, this is all that there is in the world.
I think that's very realistic.
And I remember looking at them and I'm like, well, they're like my brothers. Like, I've known them since I was four.
Totally.
And I don't think I could marry any of them, so I have to go to a different school.
I love how pragmatic. It's like wildly romantic, like that age where you start really yes. feeling like that's really important, mm-hmm. and because you got to figure out something to do with the feelings,
right,
and the hormones and all that kind of stuff. But then that you're like very pragmatic, like, well, listen, I'm looking at my selection.
I
love all these people, but this is not going to work for me. Especially yes. too, because I would wonder. You know, because you have had a parent who was tied in with this world of just multi-age, mm-hmm. new people, old people, you yeah, know, people exactly. who consider each other colleagues, but who have 25 years apart and yes. in age and stuff, to see that outside of your school environment and to feel like, well, this is the world. I mean, this yeah. is what the world outside my school is like. And then to feel like you're just walking in a row kind of mm-hmm. with the same people all the way through.
That's a really good
it
point.
It totally makes sense.
I never
sense
thought
for you
about
like,
that, but it makes yeah. total sense.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely always been a lot older in my head and in my soul than what my birth certificate shows. I'm like a 90-year-old woman, I swear.
Girl,
like,
I get it.
I watch Planet Earth at 8 o'clock and go to bed. Like, that's
speaking
my night.
My language. You're speaking my language.
And so, yeah, it definitely makes sense, because that's so true in the music industry. It's like, I'm writing with people. I'm out here with Jeff Silbar, who's in his 60s, and my boyfriend's in his 40s, and I'm in my 20s. And so it's like all of these things are so different, and you're around all these different age types, all these different types of people from everywhere, because nobody in Nashville is actually from Nashville other than like me and two other people.
Uh-huh. And those same 40 kids that
yes,
you went to
school
with.
Yes, my friends from school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love them dearly, but none of them were husband material.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
There's nothing quite like sailing in the calm international waters on my ship, the SS Biopic.
Avast! It's actually pronounced biopic.
No, you dingus! It's biopic!
Who the hell says that? It's biopic. Because
it's the words for biography and picture.
If you...
All right, that is enough. Ahoy, I'm Dave Holmes. I'm the host of the newly rebooted podcast, formerly known as International Waters, designed to resolve petty but persistent arguments like this. How? By pitting two teams of opinionated comedians against each other with trivia and improv games, of course. Winner takes home the right to be right.
What podcast be this?
It's called Troubled Waters, where we disagree to disagree.
Do you have siblings?
I have a sister. I have an older sister, and I'm really excited because she is pregnant.
Oh, congratulations.
She's due in June. She's due at the end of June with a little girl. So nice. Coming very soon. It's the first grandchild for my parents and my first niece or nephew. So I'm super excited.
Yeah.
She's down in Florida, so we're all over the map.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess Florida's not too terribly far.
I'm in the middle of
Canada for
baby shower planning right now because it's happening next weekend. So,
oh man,
yeah.
Are you nervous about the shower going off without a hitch?
Yeah,
no pressure.
Because my sister and I love her to death. We are 100% opposite in a lot of ways. We are both very girly, and that's probably the one thing that we have in common, that we're very girly. We're very feminine. We love pink. But she has a very, very high taste, and I would love to have a high taste, but I can shop at Target and that's about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but she's selling like these beautiful oceanfront properties in Florida. So we've got a little bit of a different lifestyle. I'm a songwriter in Nashville. So she's very fun to go visit, her and her husband. But yeah, she has a very high taste. And so this baby shower has very high expectations that I'm trying to fill.
I hope someone gave you a budget that you could work off of and you're not having to scrape it together by yourself.
I've got some help, and my mom's helping, and my mom's best friend from beauty school is helping. My mom went to beauty school back in the day.
Wonderful. So. Is she practicing? I'm saying that like she's an attorney. I love that.
she's not anymore. But yeah, she still will help me do my nails and help make me pretty.
How about hair stuff? That's what I probably could use.
Her main thing was hair.
Yeah.
She did all the perms and all that stuff.
God, perms. Are people still getting perms?
I don't know. I've never gotten one.
I've never gotten one either.
My dad had one. My dad had a permed mullet.
Oh my God. Please tell me that Burt Reynolds was like, number one, get yourself a permed mullet.
Probably.
As he's putting together this band.
My dad had the Burt stash at one point too.
Oh, yeah.
He had it going.
But listen, Burt Reynolds looked great with that mustache. When I see him in things and he doesn't have one, I feel embarrassed like he's not wearing pants. Like there's a nakedness to certain men that have facial hair. Some people can go back and forth.
That's
some
amazing.
People, they take it off and you're like, I shouldn't be seeing this. Like, oh, I'm sorry. I'll look the other way.
That's so true.
Put it back on. Yeah. I think especially if you have like thinner lips as a man, because sometimes the mustache sort of acts as like an extra lip. I've never said this out loud before. Yeah, it plumps you up a little bit. Same with Sam Elliott. I don't want to see Sam Elliott without a mustache. That doesn't feel right at all.
No.
It feels like I'm seeing something I'm not supposed to see.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
I mean, listen, that's very judgmental of me.
It's
like guys who are like, girls should have long hair. But don't cut your hair. But
like a boy.
Yeah. But those are the two that really spring to mind where I'm like,
no, put it back on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Grow it out.
So your dad does not have a permed mullet or a stash.
No, neither one. They've both gone out the window, but he does have a good set of hair.
Nice.
For a 65-year-old man, he's got some nice luscious locks going on.
Wonderful. Is he a silver fox?
He is.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good-looking man.
Feels like when guys keep a very full head of hair, usually it also goes along with them turning silver, which I think is kind of a great look, a little salt and pepper action.
Mm-hmm.
Never heard anybody.
Yeah, it's like it's a little light blonde going into the gray right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so he's blonde. Why am I, what am I doing? I'm like,
I don't know.
I don't want to date your dad. I want to make it very clear. I've maybe gone down a weird road where like I'm very picky about his former look and his current look. Not important.
Not important.
So let's jump to when you did go into your public high school.
Yeah.
Was it what you were kind of hoping? Did you sort of go walk in and go, oh, I don't know most of these people?
You know, the first year when I was in seventh grade was one of my favorite years of school ever, actually. But at the same time, this is so weird. It was like the greatest and the worst because I felt so much freedom, and because I had worn uniforms my whole life, and all of a sudden you have to pick out what you're going to wear every day. And there's so many options, and there's so many different types of people that don't necessarily believe all the same things that you've been taught your whole entire life. And so there's all these different types of cultures that you're exposed to. And so it was just such an overwhelming, like, eye-opening experience. And granted, this is in the middle of Tennessee, so it's not that crazy. But right. for like a girl that had been to Catholic school right. her whole life, it was still like,
You'll take whatever diversity you're going to be exposed to at that
yeah.
point.
And so there was so much, I made so many friends and I just felt so like welcomed by people. And I was expecting to be nervous about that and not be welcomed. But I really had such great friends that year. And but at the same time, I got this debilitating anxiety mm-hmm. disorder, like all of a sudden just having panic attacks where I couldn't go to school. I would have to sit in the corner of the classroom or sit on the ground because I would feel like I was falling out of my desk. And it was just like,
oh my God, no one ever talks about it that way. Like, but that's what I went through.
Really?
Yeah. But I was like 18.
Oh my God.
And that started happening to me. And I had to tell my professors at my university,
yeah.
like I might, if I ever get up and bolt out of the room,
mm-hmm.
it's not a sign of disrespect. It's that I literally feel like my body is either going to float up to the ceiling
yes.
or get sucked into the earth.
Yes.
And I have to move and walk around mm-hmm. to like reconnect.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Oh my God.
That was
I've never
thing.
Heard anybody talk about anxiety with respect to like, I thought I was going to fall out of my desk.
Yeah.
That is how I felt.
Yeah.
I was like,
I
can't.
I would sit on
I'm
the
not,
floor.
Life is not stable right mm-hmm. now in any way.
Yeah.
Oh, so, you were so young.
But imagine,
I
like,
was so
that
young.
Was...
I feel so sorry for young me, and you were so much younger even than that.
Yeah, it was
Jenny.
It was a crazy, crazy time, and especially like when you're like everything's like smooth sailing. You got these
yeah.
friends, and then all of a sudden, it's like, oh, you are a freak. You are sitting on the floor in the back of the classroom, but my teachers were so supportive of it. But I mean, obviously for kids, it's hard to understand what's happening. And then for me, I'm just like, I am a weirdo and
sure.
I want to be normal and all of that stuff. And so the rest of middle school was a little hit or miss, kind of shaky there for a second. And in high school, didn't get much better. I'm like, I'm not trying to talk like negative at all.
No, but. I mean, that's what, there's no rule. People are all around the world having every kind of experience you can imagine
exactly.
at that age. And I think anything that we can feel emboldened to share that makes
yeah.
other people feel like they're not like you felt,
right.
you know, this weirdo who's just floating out in the middle of an island of like,
right.
nobody gets this,
yeah.
you know, then that's that, if that helps one other person,
mm-hmm.
then great, you know?
Oh yeah. Cause I mean, my parents are, I love them to death. They're the greatest parents in the world. And they were so confused. They didn't know what to do. And I mean, there were a couple times when I had to go to the hospital because I was just having these panic attacks where it was just, I thought I was dying or I would hallucinate
yeah.
things. And they thought maybe I was schizophrenic, and it was crazy for a while there. And
I'm so sorry to interrupt you.
No, you're fine.
I was going to say, what were people telling you early on? What were like the professionals or counselors? What was the going theory of like, well, this
basically,
is why this might be happening now.
Yeah, it was basically just that I've always had a bunch of like fearful thoughts in my head, that I've always been a very cautious girl, because I had always been very like fearful of things when I was little. I was always scared that people were going to break into our house or something like that. I was scared to sleep over at a friend's house. And so I've just always been a very anxious person, but I had never had an actual like straight up anxiety attack where it feels like your whole body is just about to explode. And so that was when I started really freaking out and going to these doctors, and they would try and put you on antidepressants and anti-anxiety and whatever and all that stuff, and it just made everything worse. And when I went to high school, I got into a relationship with a boy that was a junior, and so it was a big deal. I was like dating this star baseball player, and it turned into a very abusive relationship really quickly. And we ended up going to court and doing all that crazy stuff when
I love like that you're saying that, like,
15.
That's a thing we all know, like,
yeah,
you know, all the stuff that goes along
casual
with going to court.
I'm just gonna
in
drop
your high
that in
years,
here for
no
some
big
contest.
Whoop, we've all been there.
But
oh,
so
no. And was part of that a feeling of like, because I remember being, when I was at my most like afraid and sort of just trying to keep a handle mm-hmm. on things, but also really wanting to be happy, yeah. not wanting to sink into it, feeling a desperation yeah, to sort of exactly. doggy paddle my way out of it. I became very dependent on mm-hmm. on the relationship that I was in because
yeah,
it was someone I could figuratively and literally hold on to.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know,
and I think I really needed that, but it wasn't necessarily the yeah. best fit.
Yeah, both positive and negatives, because there were times where it was really nice to have somebody there, but he also used it in his advantage, right. you know, to take advantage of certain situations, and it ended up kind of we'll pause for a second.
Sure. So he kind of took advantage. Yeah. And he's a kid too, not to say that makes it okay at all.
Right.
But what a mess.
It was a mess. That's a good word for it. And so I ended up, my parents helped me get out of that relationship, and I switched high schools, went to a new high school, and then left that high school again because I was just so out of my element at that point. I was so wrapped up in this anxiety and getting out of this terrible relationship and being in and out of the court system with him for a few months and like figuring out all of this stuff. And he was a well-known person in our community. And so friends, even just around town, because there were only two high schools in my town. And so it was like, everybody knew everything. And so when it turns into a bad situation. And so I left my second high school. I would say I wasn't even there for a year. And then I finished my junior year. I graduated a year early from a homeschool type of place. Mm-hmm. I went to community college at night so that I could get extra credits and just be done with school as fast as possible, because it was just not my thing whatsoever. And I was just ready to move on.
Well, again, it's like all these things that, you know, while you're having... You know, it's not that it's not as extreme as like, and you became famous when you were 15 and you right. were touring all over the world. You're still anchored to being a teenager in the sense that right. like you're bopping around to these schools, but at the same time, you really are flooded with this stuff. You know, we got the good side of it, which is being in your dad's kind of world with mm-hmm. you know, people of all ages and yeah. equals and that kind of thing, but then you have this like flood of grow up.
Right.
Really quickly.
Still growing up in this
anxiety and town, and the relationship being garbage and having to bring the law into it and all that kind of stuff that so many people, you know, don't have to deal with at such a young age. So it's like the anxiety would have been enough, but then the anxiety accidentally spurred on some other stuff, maybe. Mm-hmm. Not to say, again, not to be like, it's your fault you picked that guy because you had anxiety.
No, I definitely attracted that.
But a person who took advantage of that mm-hmm. did. Mm-hmm. And so then you have this stuff on top of stuff on top of stuff. I mean,
but you know what?
It you must have just been like, please give me something stable.
It makes for great songwriting.
Hey. You're not wrong. Sometimes I think about that. When I listen to people I know are happily married and they're still making music years later, mm-hmm. I honestly sometimes do think, like, I don't know what she's singing about, but as far as I can tell, she's happily married.
I know sometimes when you get too happy, it screws things up.
It's like, what are you thinking about other people's stories? Or are you just inventing it? Like, I don't ask that of fiction writers. Do you know what I mean? But for some reason, songwriting is so personal, and I associate with my own writing as like, it has to come from the heart. It has to be about something that, you know, it's like, you know, Matt, the lead singer of The National, has a wonderful wife and they're happily married. Uh-huh. And so if he's singing a song that sounds like it's about another woman or a breakup, immediately I'm like, uh-oh. And I'm like, wait, that's
is
not,
everything okay?
I don't, he doesn't have to, no, wait, hold on. Yeah.
No, it's so true, because you immediately think, as soon as you hear somebody singing to you, they're telling you something about themselves.
Yeah.
And it's true for the most part, because even if it's not word for word their story, everybody's gone through something that you can draw from those same emotions and create a story based on that. But that's also something that's really unique about Nashville and the co-writing scene, is that you're constantly writing with a bunch of crazy people that have had all of their own crazy experiences.
You all get to sort of share each other's things. Well, I think that's actually huge.
Yeah.
I think that's a really, really good point. And I would probably really enjoy that, because mm-hmm. I think sometimes you know, we get too attached to our work if we're only just writing for ourselves and we're living in a vacuum and
yeah, absolutely.
We're not bringing in collaboration. And, you know, yeah. if you can, it's maybe easier to be a little more objective about yeah. whatever the finished product yeah. is going to be if you have this kind of collaborative, you know, cooperative of yeah. people that you're working with.
And that's why I love country music too, specifically why I just love it with all my heart and soul, is that you get to narrate a lot more in country music. There's so much storytelling and there's so many different ways to portray different emotions that aren't necessarily, this is me, look at how pretty I am, or look at how cool I am, and all of that stuff, which not that that's a bad thing, but that in pop music, there's so much of like selfie culture and look at me type of thing. And that's very much the world that we live in. But my favorite thing about country is that I get to turn that on its head and place a different character. Like I get to be Betty Lou or whoever it is yeah. from these crazy stories that yeah. I'm making up.
Or even just sing about someone else. Yeah. Like it doesn't even have to be you personifying right. from an I perspective.
Right.
Some of the great, you know, country songs are about this other person that the narrator is
yeah.
saying, I'm telling you this story about this mm-hmm. thing that's not me. That I'm watching just like you're watching it.
Exactly.
Yeah. That's great.
Like painting a movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's huge. That makes a lot of sense. And I hadn't really thought about it, particularly with respect to pop music and this sort of selfie culture. Everything you said, like, I'm sure that's something that that comes up a lot for you in what you do. But it's yeah. something that I didn't necessarily have the objectivity to go, wait a minute, mm-hmm. that absolutely makes sense that
yeah,
there would
I think
be this
that's
sort
the
of
biggest difference between the genres is that there is the such different cultures on the way that we're portraying different lifestyles or different emotions and things like that. And neither one of them is right or wrong. It's just the difference between whatever your preference is.
Yeah. I mean, it feels like there's a real opportunity for compassion there in a way that could be really special.
Yeah, because, I mean, country music started from front porches, literally. That's where it all began, and just singing about real life and real life stuff and who you love and what you love and what you're doing today and what you want to do with your life and your babies. And, you know, it's all that real life stuff that at the end of the day, that's what every single human on the planet can connect with.
Yeah.
Because everybody is all about, they want to be loved. They want to love, they want a family, you know, that's what we thrive off of. And so that's such a unique, beautiful characteristic of country music.
Absolutely. Were you writing? So I it's funny because now we've got these different pockets. We have a little patchwork of your adolescence that when we started talking.
Have fun digging through that.
Listen, we're going to take 20 minutes. Yeah. I'm going to come back with some sort of a chart. It might look like a tree. It might look like a pie. I'm not
sure.
We're
going to make a flow chart.
A flow chart. We're going to see some real currents moving through things. No, but obviously when we first started talking about you writing and when you kind of made the connection that all of these things fit together for you to mm-hmm. start playing and writing music more, that is contemporaneous with some of this anxiety stuff that mm-hmm. you were dealing with. So were those two things informing each other when that was happening? Did you write about those things when you started working on music?
So at first, I was writing mainly just the stories when the anxiety was happening. Because really, I didn't start legitimately writing songs until I was 16, around 16. And that was after I had gotten out of this abusive relationship in high school. And so really in the beginning stages of the anxiety, I was doing a lot of poetry and a lot of stories. And so that was kind of, There were some dark stories in there for sure. Just trying to figure out like, okay, what is it that I'm feeling? And then one of the downfalls of the relationship that I got into just really completely shut down all creativity mm-hmm. that I had. I wasn't interested in singing. I wasn't interested in playing the piano or writing my stories or anything like that. Because
was part of it that did he make you feel less than and small? Was he abusing you?
There was that, but then there was also, because honestly, when I was in the relationship, I was so brainwashed that I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And it wasn't until the end and after I got out that I realized all of this stuff that I had been brainwashed about. And so in the middle of it, I was just so consumed with, oh, okay, we're going to get married and we're going to have babies and I don't need to do anything because I'm going to be a wife and I'm going to be a mom and I don't need to worry about any of this music stuff. It doesn't matter anymore. Mm. And so it was just kind of everything just shut down. And that was my focus because I was so like sucked into this crazy cycle of thinking that this was my life now. And, and so, thank God that didn't actually happen and that, my parents were smart enough to realize what was going on and get me out of it, help me get out of it. And as soon as I got out of it, it was, okay, I'm writing, here I am, boom. They're like a total influx of song ideas and just needing to get out what had happened, because it was really after the fact, kind of like I just said, that I started realizing like, oh my God, that's what was happening. Okay. And then you start getting angry. It's like this weird level of emotions that you go through, because obviously I was sad at one point, like, well, I thought that I loved him. I thought that we were going to get married. And so there's this sadness. And then there's this anger that comes along once you realize what that person was actually doing, that it wasn't what you thought it was, and that you've been betrayed and you've been made a fool out of and all of this stuff. It was this weird kind of trying to sort through all of those feelings.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
It absolutely does.
And putting them into stories, which turned into songs and to music and singing. So I got a lot of that out immediately. Mm. And then I very quickly realized that I wanted to laugh. And that laughter was the best medicine. And I didn't want to be somebody that sat here and sang all of these like poor me songs, because that doesn't do anybody any good. So very quickly I started writing things that would make people laugh. Like one of my like first funny songs was called Big in Jail. And it was about this girl that, she became the famous singer in her jail cell, and people like all the other inmates would come visit her jail cell and try and get her autograph. And it was just like super weird. Like yeah. I was a weird kid making up these weird stories, but I just wanted to make people laugh and have a good time, because I noticed like everybody at a certain point in their life has gone through something similar, whether the situation is similar or not, it doesn't matter. It's those feelings that I had, somebody else had. And I don't need to like complain all the time about like, oh, this happened to me. Cause I just hate that. I can't stand it when people are wallowing in self-pity. And that's what I did for a little bit right after I got out of that, just figuring out all that stuff. And thank God that I figured it out pretty kind of quickly, that that's not where I wanted to sit at. And so it just kind of opened this world of being able to create these characters that I had been creating in my stories all along, but turning them into these songs. And I found Dave, my producer, and we started writing all these characters together. And so it really just turned into a beautiful way for me to help people laugh and have fun and remember how joyful life can be.
Yeah.
And that's honestly the majority of what you'll find in my music is a lot of funny, tongue-in-cheek type of stuff, but also there's poignant moments, and it's not all just like jazz hands type right. of thing. But and I'm just rambling now, going off on a tangent.
No, not at all. I'm thinking that's. I mean, I would imagine that's where some of the Dolly Parton comparisons Absolutely. Take place, because yeah. she's so funny and so yes. clever and really used music and uses music
yeah.
To sort of wink and, you
of
know,
course.
Snap yeah. you with a little slingshot from mm-hmm. time to time and in what's a very refreshing way for many yeah. people. And that's not the worst person to be compared to.
Yeah.
Obviously,
I'll take it.
Not too
it.
Bad. One of the all-time legends.
Yes.
But yeah, I think... I mean, I loved everything you said. I think it's hard, because when we do go through these things, sometimes it's great to have, kind of like we were talking about with these mm-hmm. stories, it's nice to have the record of someone having written about
right.
the self-pity moments, because
we all have to go through that stage
process.
Yep.
Yeah. But then also being able to recognize, like, there was a point at which that wasn't doing mm-hmm. me, it wasn't helping me. It just wasn't, you didn't want to be in that.
Yeah.
I hesitate to use the word victim because I know how kind of charged all of that is.
Right.
In the current climate. And I have nothing but respect for people who are survivors. I myself am one, you are one. But you know, it's a delicate balance, mm-hmm. right? Finding where your strengths are, acknowledging when you were victimized, how long you live in that place versus
yeah.
where you go from there. You know, yeah. all of that stuff is very personal,
right.
and it can be really confusing. But
yeah, it's a fine line that you have to walk and figure out, because everybody needs their time to just wallow and feel sorry for themselves, because you just have to. And figuring it out is part of that process. But something that was just so important to me that when I became aware of, if I sit in this, then that's all I'm ever going to sit in. Because I'm such a believer in that what you think about is what you attract. And instead, let me shift my mindset to, you know what? I learned so much from this.
Yeah.
It was terrible, but I wouldn't trade it for anything, because it has put me right where I am right now. And it's given me such a huge understanding of how the world works and what I want and what I don't want. And it's, you know, led me to a path to where I've found the man of my dreams, who would never, ever, ever even come close to that, you know?
And yeah.
And so it was just really important to me to try and find a way to educate my listeners, if that makes sense, and not on like a soapbox type of way,
because
I don't know better than anybody else, but just yeah. from what I've learned to help enlighten people on, listen, we all go through this stuff, but at the end of the day, we need to find joy in whatever we possibly can, because if you're not, then what are you doing?
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely. Was there stuff that helped you through that time? Like, was there music you were listening to, or movies you were watching, or like a TV show that was sort of your escape? In addition to, you know, I mean, I know when you were in the relationship, you weren't really doing a lot of writing mm-hmm. and stuff, but was there other stuff you were sort of medicating with from our culture, if you will?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, one of my favorite records of all time was Brandi Clark's 12 Stories record. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that or not, but it's amazing that Dave actually produced, and I loved it before I even knew Dave. And so I would listen to Brandi Clark and Leanne Womack and Sonny Sweeney. There's all these amazing, strong, powerful female voices in country music that were just telling these beautiful stories. But also being able to touch on these hard subjects, and then having their moments of funny storytelling, I'm going to make you laugh, and remember that it's not all this like dark, sad stuff. And so I really was taking a lot of cues from women like that. And once I started listening to that, it really inspired me to start writing that way and being like, you know what? I think maybe that is what my calling is. Maybe that's why I've gone through these dark periods so early on, so that I can start writing immediately as soon as I had that light bulb moment when I got my guitar, that I can immediately start writing songs like that, if that makes
yeah
any sense at all.
Yeah, no, and that's I mean, again, that's with so much turmoil and so much chaos and having to navigate all of that, to then feel like you have a lifeline that is a healthy lifeline that actually mm-hmm. feels like there's a purpose to it, and you can kind of see it stretching out in front
yeah.
of you. Not to say that it's a straight line. It can have all kinds of curves and,
right.
you know, ups and downs and all that kind of good stuff. But I'm sure having a sense of purpose
mm-hmm.
and something that you were excited about.
Yeah. And country music too has always
blessing.
Been a heartbreak, you know, that they're heartbroken. These country songs and some of the greatest country songs are just this terrible heartbreak stories and going through these hard times. And so it really is the perfect place that I ended up in to have this genre surrounding me with the perfect elements that I've gone through in my life to make it
yeah.
this happy, sad, but at the end of the day, it's always going to be joyful.
Yeah. Some of the like, and I can't, oh my God, I knew I was going to do this. I cannot believe I'm blanking on her name. It's like one of the most... Not Tammy Wynette. Who's a coal miner's daughter?
Loretta Lynn.
Loretta Lynn. Damn it.
Who was the Coleman?
The most catchy, easy to remember of all but I mean, when like hearing some of her music now, it feels so modern.
Right.
It is shocking, some of the stuff that she wrote back in the day. I hear it now. Like, sometimes I'll just hear it incidentally, like at a vintage shop, you know what I mean?
Right.
And I'll be like, oh, this is so good. Whoa, this is edgy as hell. Yeah. What is happening? And then I'm like, oh, this is Loretta Lynn.
She had some
this
balls.
Is Loretta Lynn. It's bonkers. It still does. So impressive. Mm-hmm. That's some true grit right there. Oh.
Oh, yeah. Country music women have always been so hardcore to me and so just inspiring what they talk about. Because it's that real life stuff, and it's like, we don't play around.
No kidding. Know? Like, listen, if I'm going to bother getting into this recording studio, I'm going to straight shoot. I'm just going to tell you like it is. You may not like it.
Yes.
Sometimes you may. Sometimes you may laugh. Sometimes you may go, I'm sorry, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great. Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Thanks so much to the over 28,000 members who joined or upgraded during the 2019 Max Fun Drive and to all of our monthly members.
To celebrate hitting our goal this year, we're putting the 2019 Max Fun Drive pins on sale for all $10 and up monthly members.
As in past years, you'll be able to get some pins and support a great cause at the same time. The proceeds from this year's sale will support the National Court-Appointed Special Advocates Association.
National CASA does amazing work for children and youth through a national network of 950 member programs. We are proud to be able to support them.
The pin sale will run from April 29th until May 10th. And if you're a $10 and up monthly member, your personalized code is waiting in your inbox right now. For more details, you can head over to MaximumFun.org/pins.
And once again,
thank you.
All right, I want to use that to get into this MASH game. I hope to guide you through it peacefully and without too much strife.
All right.
The first category I want to give you is three country singers, women.
Okay.
Let's say women. Living or dead, whether it's likely or unlikely in this reality, in our alternate reality, three women that you would love to collaborate with.
Dolly Parton.
Great.
Folk show.
Wonderful.
Leanne Womack.
Great.
Oh my gosh, it's hard to only pick three.
Well, I'll tell you what. Sometimes when I really like someone, I'll cheat and give them a category that's like fairly similar to the category I've done before. If you want to work in a few, like if I told you that you're next.
No, I won't cheat. Okay, all right. I'll make a decision. I'll say Sunny Sweeney.
So here's what I was going to say. It's not exactly the same category, but it is, it's not that you're collaborating with them artistically. It's just a buddy, somebody that, and it could be male, female, but someone, that again, living or dead, that it would be awesome if you just had a bat phone to almost like this
Garth
is the
Brooks.
Person. Great.
Oh my gosh. Oh man, I want to say Dolly for like every single one.
I'll allow it.
Okay, Dolly.
Yeah. Because if we don't get her for this one, then we'll
maybe
be glad that we took
one.
Care of her and checked off that box.
Who else? Let's see. Oh my gosh. This is a hard game.
I know. I don't mean
this. This is like the favorites.
World,
the picking favorites.
I know, but it's like, not really your favorites because it's in the moment. This is just spontaneous improvisation. In an hour, you could have a different answer, and everyone knows that. Because I didn't front load you with any. I didn't give you any time.
How about Burt Reynolds?
It's all great. Great. See, this is perfect. Fantastic. Okay, great. Next category. Let's do three movies that you can jump into and just hang out in. You're not reliving the plot. You're not a character. It's just like a way to kind of just be in that world.
Ooh.
Just escape into that world.
Captain Fantastic.
Okay.
Have you ever seen that?
I don't think so.
Oh my gosh, you have to. It's one of my favorite movies.
Wonderful.
He lives in the woods with his children. I'm like, I just want to live in the woods.
Yeah. That's fun. I know, right?
What about The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
Can I live in Oz?
Yeah. Great.
And let's see. I want to go to the Wild West. What's a good Wild West movie? How about The Best Little Whorehouse in Texas?
Oh God, I was just thinking that because you had Dolly and side by side. That, again, that's another thing where you're like, oh, no, they didn't.
Yes, they did.
And it is so good.
It is amazing. That movie, my gosh.
Oh, Charles Durning and his whole, like, this is how to be a politician song that's like, just, you know, just yes. wriggle out of everything. Just be a little slimy. It's so amazing. It's so funny.
And God, I have a song coming out later in the summer from the album, and it's called Tulips. And Dave and I, we did this arrangement on it that sounds kind of like a little old bitty pissant country place, the one that all the girls and Dolly sing in the whorehouse. Oh my gosh. Oh, we have a can-can section.
Oh,
and
that's awesome.
It's amazing. So it's very Miss Mona-esque.
Homage, yeah. Oh, so good. I'm going to have to listen to that soundtrack today. Post-haste. Okay, next category. And I feel you will enjoy this because you and I share some dietary restrictions for the exact same medical reason.
Oh, yeah.
Is in this reality, perhaps these are things that are not ecologically conscious, not something you can digest. Maybe they just make you feel overweight and bloated in a way that you personally, whatever that means to you.
Yes.
But in this alternate reality, none of those rules apply.
Okay.
Throw them all out the window. Three things that you can have in perpetuity, snap of your fingers, no ramifications. Oh,
my grandmother's Boston cream pie.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it was so good.
Mm. Great.
God,
it's been a long time since I had a Boston cream pie. That is, it's basically
so good.
All the ingredients.
Yeah, gluten,
you
dairy.
Have.
My mom makes a really good gluten-free version.
Nice.
But it still has dairy in it, so it's still cheating for me because I try not to do dairy, but it's still good. But oh my gosh. All of these recipes, I'm thinking of like all of my grandma's recipes.
Wonderful. That's what the game's for. Absolutely.
It's called hamburger casserole.
Amazing.
It's egg noodles, which I don't eat eggs either, so there you go.
Yep.
Boom. Cream cheese, cottage cheese, ground beef, tomato sauce. It's terrible. It's so terrible for you, but it's so good. Oh,
perfect.
I would have that. Perfect. And honestly, just like a straight up Krispy Kreme donut.
Yeah. Come on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just get down to business. Krispy Kreme.
The first thing that I've had that was similar to like a legitimate donut. I told you I went to Hugo's Tacos here yesterday.
Yeah.
Fried on the outside and soft on the inside. I was I told Dave, who's here with me, I was like, we have to go back there before we leave.
Yeah.
Because
I have a bakery I really want you to go to also.
Ooh.
So I'm gonna write that down to myself right now. Okay. Okay. Wonderful. Next category. Let's do three. This is, again, boy, I'm really putting you on the spot.
Okay. All right.
Let's do three story ideas that we suddenly have because of you.
Okay.
Best Little Whorehouse musical style.
Oh my gosh.
So we have like three different tales that you're telling. It can be something ripped from the headlines, or it can be from your stories. I wouldn't mind watching a musical about these people on their tractors.
No.
I'd be very happy to see that come to life.
Oh my gosh. I've actually thought, I'm like, I need to go back and read those stories and see, because there's gotta be song ideas in there
absolutely.
Too.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Well, now I'm thinking about food. So I'm like, well, what if we had, okay, so we have the Best Little Whorehouse girls. Do we have like the,
well, I mean, like it could just be anything that like, it just a musical, like a funny musical that's about something. It doesn't even have to be, I was just thinking of that as like,
so
using that as the jumping off point of like, oh, we love
idea
that musical.
That two of these characters, there's a girl and a boy and they're cooking in the kitchen, and there's a character in my album called Adeline, and she owns a gluten-free bake shop.
Amazing.
In Jennyville, which Jennyville is this town that happens that to exist in this album. And it's called There Goes the Neighborhood is what the album's called. So the neighborhood is Jennyville. But anyways, Adeline is gluten-free, obviously. She's cooking in the kitchen with her beau, her new beau. They get into a food fight, and all of a sudden her face just drops because she realizes that he's throwing wheat flour at her.
No. My God, a cloud came over the sun right when you said that, and it got so dark.
Oh my gosh, it did.
Uh-oh. Okay,
that's
all
a
right
sign.
So should we could do our musical. Okay, could
gluten
be called
gone
Food
wrong.
Fight or Gluten Gone Wrong?
Gluten Gone Wrong.
Great. Okay, that's the first one. What else?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I have all these crazy ideas because I'm starting to write newspaper articles for Jennyville just because.
Oh, I love that you're world building.
I'm just a weirdo. So
you're going to move it. You're going to have your own place right next to Dolly Parton's amusement park. It's just ready to go.
There's a coupon clipper in Jennyville too. Her dream job is to be on an episode of Extreme Couponers. Have you ever seen that? And so
wonderful.
I want this like sheriff to be coming around, and because the circulars that everybody's been getting delivered to their houses are missing their coupons. And so we have an imposter on our hands. Or not an imposter. God. We have a, what is that called?
Bandit.
Bandit.
Coupon Bandit.
Yes, Coupon Bandit. Boom.
Right, listen, Coupon Bandit is absolutely a musical. I've never been more sure of anything in my life. Final one. I should never have worried about this. We have more than
we
need.
Oh my gosh. You're like, this girl is full of
stuff. I love
stuff.
It. I love sure. it.
Oh gosh. Okay, I just saw a rocket over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm very interested in the moon landing.
Yes. Yes. Oh, all right, so we said we set a musical on the moon.
Musical on the moon. What should we be doing on the moon? What are we?
Is it yeah? So is it like it's like we've colonized the moon, or like maybe the moon becomes a pit stop for something
else?
What
if it's the first wedding on the moon?
First wedding on the moon. Oh, I love it.
I love love.
Moon wedding.
Moon wedding.
Wedding. That also feels very doable to me.
What
very
a weirdo!
Doable.
Oh my
all
gosh!
All right, listen. He's in the other room. All due respect. All due respect. The MASH game does involve some romantic interludes. This is an alternate universe, so there's no presh on his part. Three, and they could be characters from movies. They could be from books. They could be cartoons.
All right.
It's wide open.
All right.
Some fun, love, sexy times.
Let's see here. Oh boy. Well, you said cartoons, and this is super weird that, Prince Eric from The Little Mermaid.
Great. Listen,
has always been one of my favorites.
We recently had Robin Hood, the fox from Robin Hood.
Wow.
And apparently that's a whole thing, which I kind of get.
The fox.
So Prince Eric, you're in great shape. You're among friends. You're among friends.
This is a very stereotypical one, but Noah from The Notebook.
Oh yeah. Well, great. Mm-hmm. Listen, there's a reason that he's beloved.
Yes. Oh gosh. Let's see. Let's go with Bert again.
Yeah.
Why not go with Bert?
What a peach.
What a peach.
What a peach. Okay. Wonderful.
If my dad was, or not, if Bert was still alive, maybe my dad could have hooked that up. Who knows?
I'd have really.
I'm into the older men.
You gotta tell him to grow that mustache back. You gotta tell him to put something on that. Put some hair on that naked lip. Oh, man. Okay. Next category. Let's do three places in the world. Whether you've been there or not, this is sort of your idealized version of them anyway, because getting there is no problem.
Okay.
Three places in the world you'd have a vacation home where it's just like, just chill. Whatever that means to you. It could be hiking. It could be shopping. It could be lying on a beach.
The pyramids in Egypt.
Wonderful.
I would like to live there.
Great.
Can I live there?
This is a good game for that because it doesn't feel like that's likely.
I don't think that's going to be a thing. Let's see here. Oh my gosh. This is not like extravagant at all, but I would like to have a house in Maine on a lake.
No, that's not.
I went to band camp in Maine.
I was going to ask you, I forgot to, we're so like short on time. I was going to ask you about camp because a couple of the pictures you sent along so camp-like to me. So you were like on the top bunk of like an all-wood cabin.
Oh my gosh.
And I thought, if she is not having a blast at some camp somewhere, I don't know what.
It was the best time of my life.
Amazing.
The best time. Ugh. Like me and my friends, we would, at camp, we would be like, don't you guys wish that this was school and that school was like summer camp?
Yeah, I'm sure. That's an important...
Because we would go to class. You would go to, like, your music classes and your music lessons and...
Yeah. It's not... Yeah, there's still a structure to it. There's an educational component
to it. It was like school, but it was like music school.
Yeah.
In the woods. On a lake.
Yeah, that's giving you a real early snapshot into, like, wait, what if I could have this feeling about getting tasks done?
Yes.
And learning something and always wanting to keep learning it.
Yes.
Yeah. You were getting the message then. Okay, pyramids, great. Maine, great. Nothing dumb about that. That's fantastic.
Okay. Oh my gosh, third place. Let's do a house on Lake Como. Great. My sister got married in Lake Como.
Oh boy, speaking of the extravagant. She is doing just fine.
Yeah. Because, oh my gosh, and you probably saw some of the pictures of my sister and I that he sent over.
Although at the time, I don't know if I knew it was
so,
your sister.
So, yeah, my sister is like this gorgeous supermodel, like from age like 12 maybe, like perfect looking. And I was like the chubbiest, non-attractive looking child.
I mean, you say that, but it's not like I was agog when I looked at the picture. Like, oh, I can't look.
Well, there's one of me in my, it's the Nashville Children's Choir that I was singing in. And we had to wear these like god awful red vests and long flowing black skirts.
I don't know who picks these outfits.
I don't know. They're terrible.
Someone's like, what's a thing all people will look bad in?
Right?
It's perfect. The equalizer. That's it. Maybe it's the equalizer so no one can look super great. Yeah.
So there's a picture of me wearing that with my hair pulled back in a bun and I look like Miss Trunchbull from Matilda. Honestly. And then my sister is standing next to me in like a mini skirt and her like flowing hair. So like a foot taller than me and skinny, and I'm like this little butterball. Just like, hey guys.
Well, I'm glad that you guys have a great relationship, because the weird things get in the way of that sometimes with siblings, and no one can help it. But, you know, it's also
we didn't
like
each other for a while, but we've definitely...
You've moved on.
You moved on from that.
You moved... Well, let's see what happens after this baby shower.
Yeah,
listen,
oh my gosh, I might...
It could be going
into
another dark ages.
I might be disowned from the family.
Yeah,
I might not even get to meet the baby.
Okay, final category. Let's do three skills that you wake up with tomorrow and sort of Matrix style, like you've just downloaded them. Now, it can be something very simple, like, you know, speaking a different language. It could be, or it could even be, it could be superpowers, but whatever range you're looking, what you want, whatever you want.
I like that speaking a different language, like being able to understand everybody around you, what they're saying.
Yeah.
I'm into that.
We'll do an all lingual.
All lingual.
I don't know that that's a thing, but all lingual.
I'm an all lingual mind.
Yeah, all lingual. Great.
I would love to teleport.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Especially now that I'm getting a taste of this LA life. Lifestyle happening,
the anti-teleportation city. Yeah.
And can I have like instant food that's healthy all the time, like snap my fingers and the food just appears?
Yes. Yeah.
We've been talking about food so much. I'm like,
I know. I try to feed you. I may still. And then you, okay, listen, we're not going to get into that. But okay, so this is just that part where I do a little kind of a squiggle. So just within the next few seconds or less, just tell me when to stop.
Stop.
Okay, great. I'm going to pause this, do some very rudimentary doodling. And when I come back, I will give you your 100% guaranteed fictitious MASH future.
Perfect.
Listen, this is all great news. I think you're going to feel very good about it. Although, oh no.
Oh no.
You didn't get Dolly. Oh, you know what? You did.
Okay. All right.
You did, because you can go into Best Little Whorehouse in Texas whenever you want.
Yes.
You still beat the system. Yeah, she's there. She's there. So you can hang out with Dolly Parton whenever you want.
Gosh.
So not only did you get Dolly Parton, but you also got your mentor and friend Garth Brooks.
You
get to sing and collaborate with Sonny Sweeney.
Perfect.
So that's I really scared you for no good reason. You're all fine in Dollyland, Dollywood, I guess I should say. Okay. You also, by the way, have a beautiful house in Lake Como.
Oh,
so
look at
the argument.
Me.
You got the best
Check
of a bunch
me
on
out.
That one. You have, listen, it's a little, Lake Como is a little out of the way. could be said that you don't necessarily have access to all the food you might want all the time.
Oh, I like where this is
Not
going.
Not you. Mm-hmm. Insta meal. What do you want? What's in your brain? Materialize it. No problem.
Perfect.
Wherever you are. On tour.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, no Denny's for you. You're going to be just fine. So that's fantastic. In addition, you can also have, and this includes all the things that are bad, your grandmother's hamburger casserole.
Oh my gosh.
With zero negative ramifications.
Come on
all
down.
Of it's there for you. I loved your musical Moon Wedding. It was fantastic. It was funnier than I expected.
Thank you.
I didn't necessarily know it was going to have so much humor in it, so I really appreciated that. And listen, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're sharing all of this with the one and only Burt Reynolds.
Oh my gosh. My dad would be so proud.
You guys probably met during Best Little Whorehouse in Texas during one of your many visits.
Yes.
And one thing led to another.
Sorry, Dolly.
Listen, this is very good. So that did
That's
not.
That's amazing.
That really worked out. I think that really worked out.
Didn't disappoint.
I'm so excited for you for Lebowski Fest tonight.
Thank you.
I will give you my email. I would love to hear how it all went. And congratulations on everything. This has
Thank
been
you.
So fun.
Oh my gosh, you've been amazing. Thank you for having me.
Our new friendship.
Yes.
With so much in common. Okay, and so where can people find you and listen to and all that good stuff?
Yeah, so if you go to jennytolman.com and on Spotify, Instagram, iTunes, Amazon, Facebook, whatever
you want.
I'm
sure
we'll
put a link to you, in the show notes,
too.
If you
just type in Jenny Tolman, I will pop up on whatever platform you choose.
Wonderful. I would like also to play the Welcome Mat song.
Yes,
if I could,
absolutely.
As our kind of outro.
I'm gonna do like a shameless self-promotion here. Dolly, speaking of Dolly, Dolly put my Welcome Mat on her... What Would Dolly Do playlist on Apple Music that she actually curates.
Listen,
so I haven't met her, but just the fact knowing that she heard my song and liked it.
Huge. Please.
I screamed.
Huge.
Screamed. Yeah.
Oh, this is great. Okay. I can't wait to. So you all listen to that. Enjoy that. Please support and love Jenny in all the places. And I will talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
I got friends that love the Pope and friends that love their dope. Guess we're all just trying to find a higher place. I got friends that fit the mold and friends that dance on poles. In my living room ain't no one out of place. My welcome mat. Don't care if you're white or black. Don't care if you're thin or fat. It ain't there to judge all that. My heart is an open door. Don't care if you're rich or poor. Ain't the world just a big front porch anyway. I got friends that paid for fake ones and some happy with what God gave them. They can all hang out in my house any day. I got friends that love their babies and some still single in their 80s. Yeah, we're all a little crazy, but that's okay. My welcome mat. Don't care if you're white or black. Don't care if you got two dads. It ain't fair to judge all that. My heart is an open door. Don't care if you're rich or poor. Ain't the world just a big front porch. Strokes, but we all look the same from 10,000 feet above. And we all need love. We all need love. So my welcome mat. Don't care if you're white or black, blue, red, or Republican. It don't give a damn. Love their dope. Guess we're all just trying to find a higher place.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
audience supported.